Welcome to Coffee Break with Tej. Welcome back, 96.9 Guardian Radio, GuardianTalkRadio.com, streaming live. Also, we have Indiria Sanders joining us in the house. Indiria.
Good morning, Bahamas.
The potholes got you, huh?
Yes, they did. It was like one pothole every 5 centimeters on the road.
Horseshoe Drive, people, in case you're listening. Horseshoe Drive. And we have the Indaba Project in here with us, and we're having a discussion. We're going to get deeper into this discussion. I was just asking you about how you get support. You know, how do you help yourself? Do others help you to help yourself? And Noelle, you probably could enlighten us on that. How's the support been for you?
Well, one of the programs that we do for fundraising is both a economic activity and also a environmental activity. And that is, we collect cans, redeemable bottles and aluminum cans for recycling. And we redeem those to raise money for the after-school project. And we pick up cans and bottles inside the community. We also go to events, when Burns House has a lot of the parties on the Burns House grounds. Mm-hmm. We'll go the morning after and basically sweep the grounds to collect cans. And like I say, this activity has an economic component because it mm-hmm. helps us with the fundraising. It has an environmental component.
Definitely.
Because it allows us to clean up the community. And then it also has a component of teaching the kids to be resourceful, teaching them to be to take initiative.
That's important.
And to look at their environment and see the opportunity in their environment where others might, but what might not see and be looking at the environment in that way. So it has a lot of messages that, positive messages that we think it teaches the kids. And I don't know if Ntuma wants to expand on that as well.
But it also teaches them how to take pride in their environment as well. You know, I find that when I was growing up, we had all these sayings about, you know, don't be a litter bug. And you remember a few years ago, they had these signs around, but keep the Bahamas clean, green, and pristine. I don't even see much messages about your pride in your environment and keeping the areas clean anymore. But I think that's an interesting, you know, you touched on an interesting subject right there. One of the things I want to know is, how do you galvanize the Bahamian public to actually get involved in programs like yours? I find that a lot of educated Bahamians who've reached a certain level of success choose not to go and give back. They choose to maybe go behind their gates and send their kids to schools where they're in communities where they're closed off from the wider environment at large. How do you galvanize Bahamians to participate in the community so that we all live in a better country? How wow. hard has it been a challenge?
She dropped the yes, bomb
yes,
on you.
Yes, yes, she did drop the bomb on me. Well, all the participants, okay, we have different levels of participants.
Right.
First, and to go back to funding, we are, apart from the bottles and cans recycling program, we have personal right pocket and left pocket. And then we also have this group of people who we call friends and family of the Indaba, who believe in what we're doing and who are just consistent with their support of us in any way they can. And so they keep us up. So we have those people who are supporting us. And then we have volunteers who come for the program. The program, the after-school program especially, is heavily reliant on volunteer service.
Right.
And volunteer, and so getting people to that, we always after more volunteers. Could we get more volunteers? And not only do we want more volunteers, but we want more volunteers who could participate in a very consistent way.
Right.
We don't just want
to make a commitment.
Yes, to make a commitment. We accept all volunteers, but the volunteers who come to make a serious commitment for a nice chunk of time.
Right.
Because of our clientele, the kids that we see, you
right.
know?
Right.
They need consistent adults
right,
in their lives.
Right. It's very important. And we have been, our volunteers come principally through
I heard about
through the grapevine. We have a lot of supportive volunteers through the grapevine who We get volunteers who have seen some of our other programs,
right.
maybe our lecture series. They've come to our lecture series and they're like, wow, okay, I want to be a volunteer, you right. know? So,
and how do you get them? How do you get them consistently coming back? Or is it just that you've lucked up and had a few volunteers who are consistent? What do you have to do? How hard has it been to keep people, get people interested?
Well, we can't really take on, this is yeah. my perspective. We can't really take on that responsibility because, I mean, the work that we have to do is so great. And if you can't see this as your responsibility and you can't see the value of the work, and by you being there and interacting with the kids and understanding the work that we do, if you don't have a sense of personal commitment and appreciation and investment and interest in the work, then we can't do that for you. You know, we really can't do that for you. Right. And everybody who is as a volunteer and who's a part of the Indaba Project really is committed to what we're trying to do, really right. committed to the work of community building, really committed to the family. Like I said, it's really a family. It's not really community service. We're not doing this, you know, as community service. This yes. is really about building our family. And we see all of the kids who are part of our program, all of the people who are in the community where we operate, and then the wider community as our family. And so we just have a commitment to our family. So we can really, people who volunteer have to be very, with us, people who volunteer with us and who fit into our program have to be very independent-minded in a sense and right. self-motivated and have a personal passion and commitment and drive to being a part of the family. People who are like that would find a very rich and fulfilling home with the Indaba Project.
Right.
I mean, trust me, it's so enriching to be a part of the lives of everybody who is in part of the Indaba. If that doesn't do it for you, then you know what? Nothing that we could say or do.
Right.
Not even if we paid you. I mean, it just wouldn't do it. We just can't. Yeah. We can't really yeah. take on that responsibility.
And where Noel was saying family, that's a very good word.
Mm-hmm.
But we also like to say nation. It's about nation building.
Right.
We're about nation building because we want to affect the whole Bahamas.
Right.
You know, so it's about nation building. And also, one of the things that probably makes volunteering at the Indaba Project, especially in our principal program, the after school program, difficult is because the hours that we meet, the program is centered around the kids' time.
Mm-hmm.
It's centered around the kids' schedule. And so the kids' schedule doesn't correspond with adult schedule, you know, because we meet after school, immediately after school. That's when our program starts. Mm-hmm. Most adults are at work.
Working.
And so it's difficult for many people who probably would want to come and volunteer to make that commitment at that time because right. of their right. jobs, mm-hmm. you know.
What motivates you guys to push forward mm-hmm. in such a passionate way?
What sparked the interest in this? Like, what did you see in the community that said, you know, we got to do something about this? What was that driving force?
I don't know.
It just popped into your head.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's, well, more explicitly just popped into my spirit, I think,
right. you know,
because it's beyond a head thing.
Right.
It's spiritual. It doesn't even make sense intellectually,
you know,
it doesn't make sense intellectually. So it's more in my spirit. I'm one of the founders of the Indaba Project, and we've been in existence for 15 years now. It was formed with a sister named Terry through Kwaku Street. She used to cook food, and I used to go there for lunch. And there used to be a lot of kids in the yard cutting through their yard through the shortcut. And we were just talking, and he's like, you know, maybe we could do something for all these. There's so many kids. Let's do a little program with them. And that's how we started, you know. We started just doing a little drumming and dancing with the kids, and then we just added more components to it.
So you started off with like art, basically art in the form of music.
Yes.
That's and y'all continue that up to this day.
No, the drums got busted many years ago.
Drums got busted.
Yeah. But art and music are part of kind of what we incorporate into the program. In fact, we have a really a really positive Wednesday program that we did very consistently last term, and we plan to continue, where we had Bahamian artists, authors and musicians come on a Wednesday and read, their books. We purchased their books and distributed them to the older kids, and we had the authors come and read their books with the kids. We often have musicians come in and perform for the kids and talk to the kids. We are excited about KB coming in another yes. week or so to talk about his storytelling book, his storybook that he did for kids. So that is one of the things that are important to us, culture and really getting to understand and appreciate Bahamian culture, African culture, and just understanding who we are. And it, at the Island Stewards Camp, which is our summer camp, we also, on each island, it's really a cultural immersion. When we go to each island, we went to Andros in the first year, Acklands in the second year. This year, we are gearing up to go to Cat Island, and we're still fundraising to make okay. that happen. So we, always are welcome to receive, support in that way. But when we go to Cat Island, of course, the home of Rake and Scrape, that will be a major component of what we immerse the kids in, the children in, when we go to Cat Island. So art, culture, and all of that is still a part of the core of what we offer.
Yeah, and you asking that question and with what Noel is saying about us going to Cat Island, when we started the Island Shores Camp and we went into Andros, actually that aspect of culture wasn't really heavy on our agenda. You know, it wasn't something that was explicit, but our culture is so strong and so powerful, and is so ever present. It became a major component of its own volition. When we was in Andros, okay, we went to the home of Joseph Spence. All right, Joseph Spence has been dead for a number of years, but his niece Goldie Pinder is there sitting on the porch, and we go there and we talk to her, and she's singing these songs, right? So it. And we were just passing along the street, and the driver was like, "Oh yeah, that's Joseph Spence's house." So we stopped there, and that brought a new spirit, a new richness to our camp experience. And then when we went to Acklands, we end up staying with Rupert Cox. Mm-hmm. Now we connected with Rupert Cox because he's a fishing guide, but Rupert Cox is the singer of "Oh, the mill going today and leaving off."
All right.
So now we're staying with this other cultural icon in the genre of music.
That's definitely cool.
And he's like, and he loves it.
The kids would appreciate that as well.
Oh yes.
That was
going
to be my next question.
The kids would appreciate that.
Do they?
I would love that.
Kids usually are so very American in what they think in entertainment. Do you find that kids are?
No.
They automatically have appreciation.
Look,
for this?
You put it on them, because let me tell you, in each camp, we also have an experience of ring play, which the kids initiated in our camp experience, and now has become this. Oh, when we go to this island, when we can do the ring play, So when we was in Andros, we had this ring play, and all the volunteers and everybody have their chance in the ring, So when we was in Acklands, we end up going to Salina Point, and we had Rupert Cox, and we had the Commissioner Wilson there, who is just a music Rake and Scrape lover with his kids and stuff. And so we break out some buckets. We had no musical instruments, so we had some buckets, one cooler, and everybody beaten. Rupert Cox, he going on, and he just and we have the whole community there, because we had like a community meeting in Salina Point,
right.
And the local youths, some came up and they start doing their American rap to the Rake and Scrape music.
Okay.
And then we had the ring play, and we had all the different kids. And so they are very much in this. They're very much in this. I don't know what to say is going to happen in Cat Island. And now we want to make this, we want to intentionally make this a part of our camp experience.
Definitely.
So when I went to Cat Island, I had to go, well, who does do Rake and Scrape over here?
Okay, 323-8160, 323-6232, if you want to ask the Indaba Project, Noel and them Tuma, if y'all want to ask them anything, or have any remarks, then y'all call in and chime in on our conversation. 15 years ago, you said.
Yes.
15 years ago, this started.
Yes.
And did you feel 15 years ago that it was a time, a desperate time, or was it just time to do something to keep the youths occupied? What was it?
Yeah, it felt like a desperate time.
It felt like a desperate time?
Yeah.
So what does today feel like right now, then?
It still does.
More desperate.
It still does.
It got to feel like 15 times worse.
No. Actually, it doesn't feel 15 times worse. It felt like a desperate time because of probably my own personal perspective on where we are as Bahamian people, and then in particular as African people in the world. And it seems African people have always been in desperate time in our recent histories.
Mm.
You know, we've always had a desperate time in our recent histories. And many people of African descent, even before me, were trying to address the conditions of black people in the world. And I'm sure they saw it no less desperate than what we have today. You know, so from that vein, it's still desperate today.
Yeah, know? Of course. I mean, but I'm saying, you know, 15 years ago, you're talking about, 1997?
Well, look, the serious issues that African people face took several centuries to develop. Our movement away from that, from this sickness that we have as African people, have a healing period of several centuries ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the timeline that we seem to place on ourselves actually adds to our frustration. 15 years, you know, and so our work in the Indaba Project has to be seen intergenerationally. Has to be seen for future,
right?
You know,
I like that concept.
And you know, you mentioned Africa. You mentioned us being African people. I was just about to ask you about the ties to Africa. You know, of course, you know, Indaba mm-hmm. Project, and you know, why was it important to pump that to the participants and the kids of mm-hmm. the Indaba Project?
Well,
do you feel like we've forgotten who we really are?
Yeah, that we've lost who we are and our African identity.